the topology of random geometric complexes. So I will start with describing to you what exactly I mean by the distance function and how to define critical points for the distance function. Then I will present to you our results for some limit theorems of about the critical points of the distance function. And the main part of the talk, I would like to tell you about how the critical point of the distance function tells us something about the topology of random geometric complexes and how they agree nicely with recent work by Matthew Cale and Elizabeth Meckett about these exact complexes. And finally, some future work. So let's start. Distance function I will be talking about is from a finite set of points. I have a set of points P in any Euclidean space, and I want a function that measures for each point in RD how far it is from the set P. So I'm taking the minimum of all the distances from the point in P. So for example, if my set consists of three points, the distance at each point is zero, and for any other points outside the set, I'm taking the distance to all the points and picking the minimal one, and similarly to any other point. What I would like to do is to study the critical points of this function. And the main problem with what, eventually the set P will be random, but the main problem with what I just said is that this function is not differentiable. So for example, you can see a typical distance function in R1, you can see it's not differentiable, but it does have minimum point and maximum point. So how exactly should we approach studying critical points for this function? This is what I'm going to concentrate in the next few slides. So first I want to give you some intuition about how to look for critical points, how they look like for the distance function. So suppose I have a simple set of three points, P1, P2, P3, and I want to look at the values of the distance function, so I draw them here. So black is distance zero, and brighter color means larger distance. So if I want to search for the minimum points, they will be exactly at this green point, because no matter which direction I choose, the distance always increases. Now I claim that the three blue points here are saddle points or critical points of index 1, and the reason is because if I go on the green axis over here, I'm getting closer to the green point, so the distance decreases, whereas if I'm going along the red axis, the distance is increasing. So I have a behavior similar to saddle points, and so I call these saddle points or critical points within index 1. And finally, this orange point over here, no matter which direction I choose, the distance always decreases because I'm getting closer to the point. So this would be an index 2 critical point or a maximum point. I will soon describe more accurately how to locate these points, but the first thing to note is the following. So if I'm looking at the index 1 critical point, it lies on the edge connecting two green points, and the same happens for all the other blue points. And if I'm looking at the orange index 2 critical point, then it's not on any of the edges, but it is inside the simplex spanned by the three points. And in general, what we would say is that an index k critical point is being generated by subset of k plus 1 points. So an index 2 is generated by 2 points, and an index 1 is generated by 2 points, and so on. And in the next slide, I would like to be more precise about when exactly does a set of k plus 1 points generate a critical point. So suppose I have a big set P, and I want to take any subset of size k plus 1 points and ask, does it generate a critical point or not? So I need a few notes. Suppose that k is 2, I have 3 points, and I need some notation before I can tell exactly when this happens. So the first thing to do, I place my points on a unique k minus 1 dimensional sphere. So for example, 3 points I can place on a circle, assuming that they are in general position, but this is what I'm going to assume. I denote the center of the sphere by C of S, the radius by R of S, and more notation, so conv of S is the convex hull, a K simplex in this case. And finally, these 3 points doesn't have to be in R2, they can be in any D-dimensional space, so B of S is a D-dimensional ball, centered at C of S, and the radius of it is in R of S. So with this notation, I can tell you exactly when such a subset generates a critical point, so it needs to satisfy two conditions. The first condition tells me to check that the center of the sphere lies inside the simplex, and the second condition tells me to look at the larger set P, which might contain additional points, and make sure that none of them is inside the D-dimensional ball I drew here. If this is the case, if these two conditions hold, then I will have a critical point for the distance function located at C of S at the center, and the value there would be the radius, the distance to each of the points. So let's see an example. So suppose this is my big set P. I have a lot of points. And now I want to go over a subset of 3 points and check whether they generate a critical point or not. So I'm starting with this subset. It has 3 points. I place them on a circle, and I'm checking the two conditions. So the first one tells me to check that the center is inside the convex hull. This is true. And the second condition tells me to check that no other green point is inside the gray area. Also true. This will be a critical point with index 2, a maximum point. Suppose I'm choosing a different subset of 3 points. Then now the first condition does not hold because the center is not inside the simplex. And you can see from the arrow this is not a maximum point in this case. So I fell in the first condition. Finally, if I choose the last subset, so the first condition does hold, but I have two green points lying inside the ball, and therefore this is also not a critical point. And the reason here is that if I examine the values of the distance function very close to the orange point, then they are completely determined by the closest points, which are the ones inside the ball, and then completely ignore the 3 points I'm checking. So they are meaningless in sense of the distance function around the orange point, and this will also not be a critical point. So this is how to think about critical points for the distance function and how they're defined. And now I'm going to present the specific setup we will be examining, the random setup. So we have a set of n IID points. They are independent and identically distributed in RD with some nice density f of x. And what we would like to study is the following value. So we want to count how many critical points we have with a specific index k. And we don't want all the critical points. We want only those where the value of the distance function is less than some, is bounded by some value r of n. So for example, if this is my sample x1, x2, x3, and I'm looking at the index 1 critical point generated here, then I'm only interested in those who are very close to my original green set. So I probably will ignore p2 and p3 because they are too far away from our original set, and I will count only p1 in this case. So I'm looking for the behavior of the critical points locally, very close to my set. What I would like to do is to find limit results, or the limit behavior of these values as the number of points goes to infinity, and the size of the neighborhood I'm looking for, this value Rn, goes to zero. So I have more and more points, but I'm looking for critical points closer and closer to my original set. And eventually what I would like to do is to say what all this has to do with the topology of random complexes. Okay. So now I will present the set of limit theorems we have for the value I just described to you. I will start with the expectation, with the mean values. So it's very similar to many phenomena known in random geometric graphs and random geometric complexes. The results split into three different phases. The critical phase is this one in the middle, and they all depend on the limit of the term n times rn to the d, which is more or less the average volume of the ball taken by n points. As you can see, you have different results for each of these phases, with the first one, the subcritical one, completely different by the scaling factor here. And we can compute the limit values for the expectation. They are given in some integral form, which I wouldn't get into because at this point we don't have a lot of intuition of what it means, but it involves the density function and some indicator function we call H1, which somehow related to what I talked about before, with the center being inside the convex hull and something bounding the radius. Similarly, we have also results for the critical and supercritical phases, again involving the density and this indicator functions. And in the critical phase, all the results depend exactly on the limit lambda here. So it can be anything except for the supercritical phase, where I will put on some restriction later. So now I'm going to present stronger limit results for each of the cases separately because they behave a little bit differently. So in the subcritical phase, when n r n to the d goes to zero, so the radius rn shrinks very fast. This is what we had for the expectation, and it turns out that the variance of this value, the number of critical points, behave exactly the same. It has the same normalization factor and the same limits. So it somehow resembles a Poisson distribution having the same expectation equal to the variance. And so if I want to further explore what other limit results can I say about this value, then I would have to split it again into three different cases depending on what is the limit of this term here. So if the normalization factor goes to zero, then basically all the values I have go to zero. The expectation is zero and the variance is zero. And it's easy to show that the number of critical points also go to zero in this case. And if it is a finite value, then we have a convergence to some finite value with expectation equal the variance, and not surprisingly, we get here convergence to Poisson distribution. And finally, if this term blows up, then by normalizing properly, we can have a central limit theorem, and everything converges to the Gaussian distribution. In the critical phase, so the normalization is much simpler, everything is just for the n. And what we can show here is that the variance also scaled like n. It has a different value now. It's not the same as the expectation, and we get central limit theorem here as well. Now, the last case, we have to be a little bit careful. We don't have the results here for any density function f. We need further restriction on f, and we need it to be that the support of f should be compact and convex. And also, if I'm looking at the support, then f should have positive infimum there. Assuming that this, these are technical conditions needed for the proof. I hope that at some point we could avoid them, but for now this is what we have. And assuming that these conditions are met, then we have the same limit result as in the previous slide. We have a CLT and results for the variance. And in addition, we have a nice behavior in a particular case. So if nRn to the d goes to infinity but faster than log of n, so you have to remember Rn always goes to zero. I'm looking at smaller and smaller neighborhoods, but this term is greater than log of n. In this case, we can show the following, that if we examine, we count how many critical points we have within a very small neighborhood, it is the same as counting how many critical points we have globally in the entire Euclidean space. So basically, this result means that in this particular case, all the critical points lie very close to the original random set of points. And this will have an interesting consequence later when we try to study the Euler characteristic of the complex. I just described to you the limit theorems we have for the number of critical points, and now we would like to link the study of critical points to the study of geometric complexes. I will start by defining exactly what I mean by complexes. So I will look only at the Czech complex in Euclidean space. So briefly describing it, we start with a set of points. We surround each point with a ball with radius epsilon. Then if I have an intersection of two balls, I add an edge to this complex. If I have an intersection of three balls, I will add a two-dimensional face, and so on generally. Get rid of the balls, and I'm left with a Czech complex. Okay, a simplicial complex. And this is the complex I will be interested in studying. I want to link it to the distance function and the critical point. So the first step would be to introduce the nerve theorem, telling us that the Czech complex I just described to you is homotopy equivalent to the union of balls used to create it. And in particular, it has the same Betti numbers. So if I want to study the Betti numbers of this complex, I can just as well study the Betti numbers of the union of balls. And the next step is to notice that if I'm looking at sub-level sets of the distance function, then what they are, if I want the inverse image of an interval from 0 to some epsilon, then it's all the points that lie within distance epsilon for my set. So it looks just like that. It's a union of balls around this point. As I increase the level, the balls might grow, they might even collide, but you still have a union of balls. So concluding everything I just said, what we did is to study the critical points of the distance function. And with a modified version of Mohr theory adapted to the distance function, we can tell how critical points of the distance function used to study the topology of the sub-level sets of the distance function. And I just told you that the sub-level sets are just a union of balls, which is equivalent to the Czech complex. So it makes a lot of sense that if we study the critical points of the distance function for some random set of points, we could tell a lot about the Benny numbers of the check complex consulted from the same set of points and vice versa. So a first topological statement we can make from the result we have for the critical points is related to the Euler characteristic of the complex. So again, we have the check complex consulted from the set of point xn. So the Euler characteristic is the alternating sum of number of simple sets, which can also be written as the alternating sum of Benny numbers or the alternating sum of number of critical points we have of each index k. Now, since we have results for the limit results for the number of critical points, we can now have limit results for the Euler characteristic of the check complex. So for example, if we examine the expected value of the Euler characteristic, it again splits into the three different regimes. It can go either to 1 in the subcritical phase, 0 in the supercritical phase, and something else in the critical phase. And I will discuss the meaning of this value a little bit in the next few slides. In the supercritical phase, this result can be sharpened a little bit, and it becomes slightly more interesting. So what we got in the previous slide is that the expected value goes to 0, but we can have slightly stronger result, saying the following. If I'm in this special case where nRNG is greater than log of n, then I can remove the normalization factor here and get that the Euler characteristic goes to 1. Now, why is that might be interesting? So an Euler characteristic of 1 we get for any ball or any compact and convex set. And if you recall from a few slides before, I told you that in this special case, in the supercritical phase, I only look at distribution were supported on compact and convex bodies. Meaning that in some sense, if I look at the Euler characteristic of the check complex, it recovers the Euler characteristic of the original space from which the samples came from. So it might be interesting, however, you might say that it's not very interesting because to begin with, I'm only working with compact and convex body with contractible spaces. So at this point, this is correct, but I really believe that this restriction to work with compact and convex body could be removed. And then what I believe is that the Euler characteristic of the check complex could recover the Euler characteristic of the original space from which the samples came from. So this might be useful in applications such as manifold learning when you want to say something about the topology of the underlying space from looking at the check complex you construct from the point. Okay. Finally, what I would like to do is to more or less wrap up everything and conclude all the known results to date about the check complex, looking at it from two different angles. One is the one I just presented about the critical point, and the other is recent work by Matthew Kale and Elizabeth Meckes studying exactly the Betty numbers of these check complexes in exactly the same setup. So I will split it again into the three different phases and discuss how everything behaves. So in the subcritical phase, if the radius shrinks very, very fast, then the check complex is more or less consists of small disconnected particles. It's very hard for points to connect. It's very hard to holes to be formed. In Kale and Meckes' work, they presented limit results for the Betty numbers, which scale like the following factor, which very much resembles the factor we got here for the number of critical points of index k. And they have the same limit results. We have the same convergence in distributions. Now, this makes a lot of sense if you think about it in terms of Mohr theory. So in Mohr theory, if I'm looking at critical points with index k, they can either increase beta k or decrease beta k minus 1 at each appearance. And so I can now say something qualitatively about the link between critical points and Betty numbers in this setup. So if I just compare the order of magnitude here, then I will get that the number of critical points of index k is significantly larger than beta k, while it's more or less of the same order as beta k minus 1 by just comparing these two terms. So a very vague conclusion would be to say that in this case, in the limit, the critical points showing up are used mostly to kill k minus 1 dimensional holes rather than create new ones. And this makes sense because eventually what we get is that we have no holes because they were all killed before. And furthermore, if we recall the results we had for the Euler characteristic, so what it said is that it is more or less like N, which is what we would expect if we have dust. We have just a set of points with no connections. This is the subcritical phase. In the critical phase, what the behavior of the check complex is that it gets more and more connected. There is a giant component show up. There is some phenomenon related to percolation here, and there are a few holes of any dimension. And in this case, deriving results for the Betti number is becoming more difficult, and the results here are qualitatively, but they say that the Betti numbers are of order n in some sense, which agrees with what we have for the number of critical points. In addition, for the number of critical points, we also have exact computations. We can show what the limits are. I told you before, we have no way to analytically evaluate these terms, these limits, but we can numerically try to figure out what they look like. And again, I don't have any intuition to give to these values, or there is no story behind them at this point, but at least we can see how they look like, and you see that they are monotonically increasing in lambda. Finally, in the supercritical phase, so what happens is that everything is more or less connected. All the points are connected to each other. We have like something like a big giant blob with very few holes, because all the holes are filled up once the points are very close to each other. There is very little known about the Betti numbers in this case. For the critical points, we do have the limit results here. What is known in this setup for the Betti numbers is the following. So Cale showed in his work that if we check what is the probability that we have a big giant blob with a single connected component and no holes at all, that this, as n goes to infinity, the probability goes to 1. And this agrees with what I just told you about having a big giant blob, but also with the result we have here for the limit of the Euler characteristic, which goes to 1, which is what you would expect if you have a big giant blob. So this more or less summarizes what I wanted to say. So I think it's very interesting to see the interaction between studying the topology of the complexes from two different directions, one trying to study directly the Betti numbers, and the other trying to study critical points, which in some setup it's a bit easier task to do, but can also lead to some interesting topological results, and I would very much be happy to continue studying this interaction between critical points and Betti numbers and see where it could lead. Finally, a little bit about future work in this setup. So my assumption throughout this talk was that I have a nice density function on RD, and all the results dependent on the ambient dimension of the points, and especially this term which controls in which phase we are. Now suppose I have samples coming from an m-dimensional manifold, where m might be less than d. So for example, I have samples in R2, but they all come from the circle, which is one-dimensional. So how the results look like in this case? And my belief, is that the result should scale like the dimension of the manifold rather than the dimension of the ambient space. And we are currently working on that, but this is what should happen. And once this is proved, I really hope to explore how all this has to do with manifold learning problems. So for example, if we know how the behavior of the Betti numbers or the critical points in this setup of a random manifold of m-dimensional manifold, then perhaps by looking at the check complex built from points sampled from a manifold, we can say something about the original manifold. And that's it. And the last idea is a bit crazy, but also interesting. So what happens if the dimension from which the samples come is not integer? So I'm sampling for a fractal body in some sense. It might have weird numbers of four dimension, and it would be interesting to study this case as well, and see whether the results here depend on the fractal dimension or anything else. From looking at simulations from sampling from fractal bodies, it looks like this should be the case. Like the result should depend on the fractal dimension, and it's an interesting thing to study in this setup. So that's it. Thank you very much.
a limit here if you were looking at only critical points that were close to mm-hmm. the set that you started with.
Yeah.
And then in the next set of limits here, if you were looking at the other characteristics, is it the case that those points that are critical points that are far away from the set weren't needed for the second set of calculations?
What do you mean was needed? No, just eventually in the limit they will not affect all the contrasting.
Yeah. Why is that?
Because most of the critical points are very close to the points in the supercritical phase. Right? In the other cases, they do somehow affect it. Like. No idea. I mean, I haven't worked out the simple Euclidean space to yet, so I don't know. They should be altered in some way, but I have no idea how exactly. No.
No more questions? Okay.